Hey everybody, this is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We've got a career advice episode for you. I had the great opportunity to speak with Tesh Alavia. He is the VP of R&D at BD. That's a lot of letters. We talked about his career. We talked about his path to the U.S., his moves around the U.S., but really just kind of what engineers should do to build a good career. He's had many opportunities, many doors open for him. He stepped right in, and we'll talk about the importance of doing that. Of course, Chris Newmark will be here early on with his Newmarkers Newsmakers, and none of this is possible without our episode sponsor, FPT. We're very happy to have our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. She'll be on the podcast as well, and she's interviewing Praveen Tabari, who's the executive vice president and a business head for FPT. So you'll hear from Praveen, from FPT, from Tesh Alavia, and of course, the one and only Chris Newmarker on this week's episode. So hope you enjoy this podcast. Let's get it going. No, wait, hold the phone. One more thing. I forgot to tell you, our final Device Talks Tuesdays of 2024 is happening this Tuesday. Make sure you go to devicetalks.com. It's brought to you by our good friends at the QT Group. And the title is Leveraging Shift Left Testing for Enhanced Quality and Compliance. I'll be leading a conversation with a couple of gentlemen from the QT Group. So make sure you go to devicetalks.com to register. All right, now let's get this podcast started. All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
Chris Newmarker, how are you, sir?
Doing well, Tom. Doing well. Moving through December now, so.
That's right. That's right. Christmas is not that far away. It's a coming. You get your shopping done? Y'all done? Oh, started?
Yeah. We're starting to get there. Yeah. We're starting to get the shopping done. All so.
Right. Here's. Now, where are the kids fall on the magic of Christmas question? Are they still fully invested?
You know, our oldest, who's eight, he's starting to be a realist. He's like, I know the truth about Christmas, Dad. I know the truth, and I'm like, you can't handle the truth. Son, this Christmas is built on toys, and you gotta stay on and magic. You gotta stay on the side of magic. You
know? Is he keeping his doubt to himself?
Mostly, we basically, just told him that's not allowed. He can't like express his don't ruin Christmas for your 6-year-old brother and sister.
Exactly. We are not revealing what the myth is that we're referring to. We'll leave the magic of Christmas open for interpretation.
Tom, do your teenage sons still believe in Santa Claus, Tom?
That would be a no, sadly. Hey. Although, I don't know. There was a point that the oldest was still sort of going along with it so well that I'm like, and this wasn't like over the last couple of years, but at a point where I thought he should know the truth, and he was like, I think he was putting on a show for his younger brother, but I was like, at some point, I'm like, do I need to set him, take him aside? And
get him like
just tell him, like, no, this isn't real, right? But
this
no,
isn't, he, this he, isn't real.
Yeah. But he, I think he was just playing along, going along for the ride for his younger brother, which is a kind thing to do. All right. Let us engage and entertain and educate our listeners on this week's Newmarkers Newsmakers, Chris Newmarker.
Newmarkers Newsmakers, we are in the edutainment business.
That's right. From the pages of Mass Device, the digital pages of massdevice.com, where you must go several times a day to get the latest in medical device news. Chris, what's number five on the news this week?
Number five, we had a really positive report from Edwards about their prospects for 2025. I mean, they're saying like on a constant currency basis, they're looking at up to 10% sales growth next year, and they were speaking very positively about TAVR in the upcoming year, which is good news, because in previous report earlier this year, the TAVR sales had been a bit disappointed, and it looked like kind of the operations at cath labs that tried to adapt to these new Cather delivered valves that are coming out from Edwards and other companies, you know, were then, you know, was kind of eating into the TAVR, like at those places. But, you know, Edwards is like, you know, saying things are moving forward now. So that's good news.
That's great. Great news for Edwards. And we, of course, have had our Structural Heart Talks podcast that's been coming out and highlighting Edwards' move into focusing on structural heart after they sold the critical care business to BD earlier this year for $4.2 billion. And our next episode of Structural Heart is coming out next week. I spoke with Todd Brenton, who's Senior Vice President and leads their Advanced Technology Group. So Todd's great.
Yeah.
Yep, Todd's fantastic.
It's interesting that they're now like really like with critical care sold off, they're now like moving forward as like really a purely structural heart company. And, you know, they should hopefully give them more focus over there. And yeah, with that report out this week, I mean, my gosh, their stock is up more than 8% for the month. So for the past month. So that's all very good news.
That's great. And the mention of Todd Brenton reminds me that he was a guest on the podcast in May of 2020. It was actually a recording I did prior to the launch of the podcast. And that reminds me that March 2025, Chris Newmarker, we're coming up on 5 years of podcasting together. How exciting!
Wow, man,
we got to do something. We got to have a party or something. We got to celebrate this. Let's start thinking. Let's put our thinking caps on.
Hey. Why don't we do like, I mean, you know, Device Talks Boston in May? Like, maybe we need a little, what do you think? Like, would we do like a Device Talks Weekly 5 years party?
Could think about doing that for sure. Maybe a party, certainly some merch. We'll have a lot to celebrate in the spring.
Yeah, so we'll have a lot to celebrate. Yeah.
Keep our thinking caps on. And I don't know, maybe there's something we could do in March. Let's think on it.
No pumpkin related, you know, products at the Device Talks Weekly party, you know?
No, I wouldn't think so. Not in spring. I don't know if you have.
Not spring.
Yeah, that's not really. As you argued for, that, you know, pumpkin spice, at least once in October, pumpkin spice latte.
Maybe once.
Was that the only one you had, though, Chris Newmarker? Honest.
That was the only one. I got it. I checked the box for the fall.
All right. I believe you.
I was done. I mean, we've had plenty of pumpkin bread and pumpkin pancakes.
Well, we've already determined that that's an entirely different story. All right, Chris Newmarker, let's roll on to number four of the Newmarkers, Newsmakers.
Yeah, you know, number four, I mean, this was just a small, you know, kind of tuck-in acquisition that I happened upon. This is from me, by the way. Edwards Life Sciences was from our ever productive, awesome associate editor, Sean Hooley. But number four, I caught that G Healthcare was buying the remaining 50% stake in Nihon Metaphysics, and that's going to allow them to fully own this Japanese radio pharmaceutical company. And, you know, they're just saying, like, this is a huge market over there, you know, making these radio pharmaceuticals that are used in imaging diagnostics and, you know, like diagnosing everything from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's disease. And it kind of seems, I suspect this is like kind of about like getting better, you know, like their like medical device companies have very much been trying to like get as much certainty as they can out of their supply chains, you know, in recent years. And I just got to think this is probably playing a role with that as well. But 183 million dollar a year business, 13 manufacturing facilities. So, and it's getting a decent amount of attention on Mass Device this week.
All right, looking at the list that you put together that in the article includes an amyloid visualization radio tracer, Vizamyl injection. So, just amazing all the visualization. The whole Alzheimer's space just seems to be really accelerating in terms of its of diagnosing and. Maybe someday even treating. It's certainly exciting.
Oh, let's hope so.
Dreadful disease. So I have a personal experience with it, and I don't wish it upon anybody else. So, good news for GE Healthcare. So, all right, we'll see where that goes. What's number three of the Newmarkers and Newsmakers, Chris?
You know, number four on the list, we've got
number
the FDA.
Number three.
Sorry. Number three on the list, we've got the FDA clearing pulse oximetry features on Movano's smart ring. So the EVMed ring. Very cool. Like that, you know, you get even more pulse oximetry available for people now with this like really super low profile wearable. And Movano said they've already begun starting collaborating with all kinds of potential partners. Just in anticipation of this clearance. So it will be neat to see what happens with it going forward.
But a little further down, Sean has from John Mastrototaro. President and CEO of Movano Health, that they launched EV Ring in the consumer wearable market, but our broader goal has always been to provide a clinical grade device for B2B channels. So,
very cool.
So they're in the the consumer bar was so much lower that they're already there. I guess they can collect a range of wellness metrics, including sleep activity, yeah, temperature variability, calories burned, and respiration rate. Wow. All right.
Yeah, all from just like a ring, a smart ring.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool looking ring too. I don't like rings. I don't like to wear a ring. Do you still wear? You have your wedding ring on, Chris Neumacher?
Yeah, totally.
I don't. It just doesn't. I don't know. Don't like the feeling of the ring. I have one. It's lovely.
Do one of those like rubber things or whatever.
I never really thought about it.
The one thing when I got Tom, I've had this ring for like nearly 20 years, but when I got it, it's like really fancy and has like braiding on it. Mm-hmm. And I've had to have it fixed a few times when I've like accidentally left it on while I was doing hard manual labor around my house.
Yeah, no. So is it like a Celtic little thing? I was looking at it. You got a little kind of groove.
It looks like it's got like kind of like little like metal braiding and and the white gold. You know, like I just thought I'd kick it up a notch. You know, a little like so. Yeah, but.
Cool. Oh, we've been married 25 years. I had mine. We actually, at our 15th anniversary, we traded in for new rings because they were not fitting great. And I love my ring. I just don't like wearing it. But I'll have to try it on when I get home. It's a cool ring, though. I'll wear it for...
Take it off when I'm, you know, if I'm like... like handling raw chicken or something.
Good plan, Chris Neumark.
I won't defrost it in the hot tub.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God.
All right. Number two on the new market. Let's move on down the list. Handling raw chicken.
Raw chicken.
This ring is tasty.
bacon. Who knows? Anyway.
Number two on the new Marcus Newsmakers, Chris.
Number two.
You put this one just to Tommy, didn't you? Okay. All right. I get it. This is how we're playing. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tom, did you know that Boston Scientific has a huge presence in Minnesota? Yeah, we Sean caught a story actually in our local business newspaper here in the Twin Cities, Finance and Commerce, which I used to be a reporter for like years and years and years ago. I probably would have written this story if I was there, Finance and Commerce caught news from the Maple Grove Planning Commission and the next town over from where I live, and the Planning Commission was signing off on Boston Scientific's planned expansion there. So I mean, their planned expansion in Maple Grove outside the Twin Cities here is moving forward.
That's right, and these plans come as part of Boston Scientific's Project Black Bear. I hadn't heard this. They had a secret alias for the project.
Used to hide the
company's identity.
I see those. Sometimes you see those planning commission documents or whatever, and they like have a special name to hide what the company is for a while, while they're just trying to figure things out.
But, mm-hmm. Project Black Bear. I like it.
I like it.
Yeah. Little Boston Bruins nod, I think. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, oh, you think so?
Yeah. I think there's something. Sending a signal that, Boston, you're still our number one, even though we're building this in Minneapolis.
Or maybe they just called it because there were a lot of black bears in Minnesota.
No. Maybe that. All right, Chris Neumarker. Yeah. What is number one on your vaunted award-winning, soon to win a Pulitzer, no doubt, Neumarker's Is the Maker's List?
Yes, number one. This is actually some tough news, and you know, the number one on the list is we're talking on Thursday, and Mass Device's homepage is just full of layoff news. It looks like we have a lot of medical device companies that are ending their year with workforce reductions. It's really been an ongoing story. We've been covering this now for 2 years, kind of this trend of medical device companies on top of all the economic uncertainties that companies in general have faced in one way or another in the last year or two. You've seen medical device companies too, like their health provider customers, or just have all kinds of, you know, problems with staffing shortages and all kinds of other things that have, made it, harder for them to adapt new technologies. We're seeing some more layoffs at the end of the year. But here's to hoping this round of layoffs is over soon. But I'd probably say the top story that we have today. I mean, actually, I ran out something on a Mass Device yesterday evening about Solventum, mm-hmm. 3M spinoff announcing layoffs, which I thought was going to be the top story in our newsletter today. But our managing editor, Jim Hammerand, caught on to a lot of chatter on LinkedIn from people talking about getting laid off over at Smith & Nephew, and looked into that situation more. And sure enough, the Smith & Nephew's got some pretty noticeable cuts going on right now as well. So selling off a U.S. campus over in Tennessee.
Yeah. So the Smith & Nephew news was in Tennessee. And Embecta, you've got 118 positions in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Cutis Medical.
Cutis, they've been. They had a thing getting delisted from the NASDAQ earlier this year. Acutus was, having layoffs, saying they were just going to focus going forward on a distribution, like an agreement they've had with Medtronic related to their technology.
And they had announced last year, according to another article by Sean Hooley, that they had planned to lay off 65% of its workforce over a year ago. They had stated that. So it sounds like this is going to plan, but the others were definitely more of a surprise than Solventum. Definitely interesting given just the recent spin out, but one could attribute that maybe to an alignment of the new business, but the timing certainly isn't great. And our hearts go out to folks getting this kind of news at this time of year for sure.
Right, I have this happening at the holiday season. I know for the Twin Cities at least. One piece of good news around Solventum is that they, I had a story just a month or so ago about how they are staying in the Twin Cities with their headquarters. That was a big open question when the spinoff from 3M happened earlier this year, was whether we were going to keep that corporate headquarters. And they're investing money to create a new corporate headquarters south of the Twin Cities in Eagan. So they'll be staying here, and they say they want to strategically invest in the business. So right now at least we're, seeing this round of layoffs going over. They're not clear yet, how many jobs are involved. I mean, they have 22,000 workers at Solventum.
Wow.
It's a big company.
Okay. Well, let's hope we don't hear any more.
I hope so too.
Hope we don't have any more in the news market newsmakers next week. So, hearts go out to those folks who are getting that news. Connect with Chris and I on LinkedIn, and if we can help somehow, we certainly will. It's always good to hopefully you're out there in the social media world getting your story told. But feel free to connect.
I would say too, I mean, we're catching news on Mass Device about companies that are growing as well. There is a story on Mass Device today about Miyamo. Pricing a $15 million offer, and they're saying that it's primarily going to increasing headcount because they need to scale up, because they say they got a new Medicare rule that's going to make it easier for them to get their exoskeletons to people. So So you go. MIMO around Boston, they're hiring. So like keep an eye on Mass Device. We'll keep you informed on where the new jobs are.
Absolutely. All right, great. Great list. Comprehensive list. Not all of it great, but comprehensive list. Chris Newmarker. Yeah. And we've got two more of these puppies left this year.
Yeah.
And next week we'll have a special guest, a familiar guest, joining us on the Newmarker's Newsmaker. So.
Fantastic.
Yes, yes, sir.
You're leaving it. Oh, you're just like teasing it. I'll have to find out who this is.
Yes, you'll have to wait till you hop on Riverside next week.
All right. Sounds exciting.
All right, man. Have a good
All
day.
All right, man. You too.
Hey, everybody. Before we get into our interview and hear from our sponsor, FPT Software, I wanted to remind you that the registration is now open. Registrations are now open. I'm not sure what the plurals would be in that. Anyway, you can register for both Device Talks Boston, which is happening on April 30th and May 1st at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. And you can also register for Device Talks Minnesota, yay, which is happening on June 11th. Go to boston.devicetalks.com to register for Boston. Go to minnesota.devicetalks.com to register for Minnesota. If that's too much to remember, just go to devicetalks.com and you can find links to all of our great content and conferences there. So now let's hear from our sponsor, FPT, interviewed by our managing editor, Kayleen Brown.
Praveen Tiwari, Executive Vice President and Business Head for FPT, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Kayleen. Thank you for having me.
Praveen, I'm really excited to learn more about FPT. So can you tell us a little bit more about FPT?
FPT started in 1988, and today it is among the largest corporations from Vietnam. FPT is around $2.17 billion in revenue with 80,000 employees. We are spread across 30 different locations in the world. 70% of our resources are in Vietnam and 30% across the globe, but largest center outside Vietnam is in Japan. Then we also have center in Europe, in Asia, and we recently acquired a company in Costa Rica and Colombia. So we have a nearshore center in Costa Rica, Colombia, and Mexico, which brings a lot of advantage to our U.S. customer being in the same time zone and half the cost of resources in U.S.
We'll hear more from Praveen Tiwari, Executive Vice President and Business Head for FPT, a little later on in the podcast. If you want to find out more now, please go to fptsoftware.com. Once again, that's fptsoftware.com. And now we bring you our interview with Teshtar Alavia, VP of R&D for BD Interventional Surgery.
Well, Teshtar Alavia, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me here. Absolute pleasure. Been following these for a while.
Excellent. I've got a lot of questions about BD surgery. I want to know about the business and about the design, but of course, and the products that you're putting out. But as anyone who listens knows, we like to start off by understanding who we're talking to and what their story is. So Tesh, how did you find your way into the medtech industry? What drew you here?
It's a great question. I grew up in India, and I grew up around healthcare practitioners. So my mom's a nurse. Both my aunts are nurses. Their daughters are nurses. So in some way, shape, or form, since a young age, I've been living the healthcare world and wanting to contribute to it in some way, shape, or form. Honestly, having that exposure very, very early in your life, attracted me towards it, and the ability to, you know, solve problems for people, and the happiness that you see when they are actually restored in their health, and the satisfaction that you get from being a part of it is what started my journey towards being in this field.
Did you initially try to be a doctor and get torpedoed by organic chemistry, or what happened?
You know, that's the norm. My mom in India, there are only like three professions, right? Doctors, engineers, and lawyers.
Right.
And my mom, being a nurse, really wanted me to pursue, being a doctor. Unfortunately, I don't do well with some of these things in terms of being able to provide first-hand care to people. But I did figure out a way to use that engineering talent in terms of aiding healthcare practitioners who can actually deliver the final, health to the patient. So that's what happened.
what was a biomedical path the clear one for you, or were you engineering and then kind of said, oh, I can, did you become an engineer and then direct it toward biomedical?
You know, honestly, I did my bachelor's in chemical engineering. And while I was doing that, I had a close friend who I lost to burns. And that started, you know, that had a deep impact. We were best friends, used to go to college together, lost him in burns. And that kind of piqued my interest in the biomedical or biochemical regenerative aspect of healthcare. And when I came to the United States for my master's, I was fixated on doing it in an area where there was some kind of regenerative aspect in my research. So that's how I started or deviated from my pure organic chemistry path into more of a biochemical path. And that's where I started. And I actually did my thesis around collagen-based scaffolding.
Interesting. So did you work on that professionally at any point? I'm looking at your background right now.
Yeah, so, you know, I worked not necessarily related to burns, but my first real job with J&J, you know, Depew Spine as an engineer, was in that field of making biologic scaffolds, although it was for spinal intervertebral body fusion.
Okay.
So in a way, you know, sometimes you have the feeling beggars can be choosers when you're an immigrant studying, you know, in the country and you get your first job, you might not always have the choice, but I thought it was a good compromise to kind of say I can use some of my work in collagen scaffolding to heal another area, right? So we started with spinal intervertebral body fusion.
And what brought you to the States?
Parental pressure. I honestly did not want to come. I was happy doing what I was doing. My mom and dad met a friend of theirs, and their kid had studied law in Cornell.
Okay.
And they were raving about the experience. Now, and you know, ironically, that kid is back in India and I'm still here 22 years. But that my mom and dad came home one day with a bright idea that said, like, oh, you have to go to the United States. And frankly, Tom, we come from a really middle class family. So we had to beg, borrow and steal money to make it pay. So my parents finally cobbled up after going through 50 charities. I remember $6,000 of, you know, beg, borrow and steal money. My dad actually took voluntary retirement from his bank job so that he could fund some of this. And it was only one semester's fees. And then he said, that's all I have in a plane ticket. And you're going and you're going to figure it out on your own after that. So I never took a dime after that from them. I figured it out. But I'm eternally grateful that they found $8,000 at that time back in 2001 to be able to send me here. I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for that push. So I was really happy.
We're currently putting my older son through school and it's a different situation entirely, but there's some of that. Well, we'll figure it out next. Like we'll one semester at a time. That's a big chasm for you to clear. How did you ultimately make that work, if you don't mind me asking?
No, I mean, I think for the first semester while I was covered, I really started to look for on-campus jobs.
Yeah.
And remember, I came here in 2002, which was just after 9/11.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So the environment was, one, none of the seniors were graduating because they couldn't find jobs, right? Especially for immigrants who were not green card holders or citizens. The job applications, you know, at that time blatantly said only U.S. nationals apply.
Interesting.
And so nobody was graduating because they would delay their thesis, they would delay their graduation so that they did not have to look for a job. And that meant any incoming class would not find on-campus jobs. So one, I had to find, struggle really hard to find an on-campus job. In between, what I did was I figured out that there was a discipline in the university called engineering management, where if we did a double major, that they would provide for some scholarship. So I actually said, okay, along with my biochemical, I'll do engineering management as well, as long as you pay for these courses. And I got really lucky where they paid for the courses. And, that's how, we subsisted for a couple of years until I found a job.
That's remarkable. And your parents still take credit for your success?
They should. They really I give them a lot of credit for my success, the way they brought us up. We compromised on a lot of things, but the one thing my parents never compromised on was education. I think they sent me to the best of schools, anything related to like education. There was no compromise. There was compromise on like how often we went out to eat and what I could buy and, you know, enjoy, but nothing around education. So
that's fantastic.
A lot of kudos to them.
So going back, that's a great story. Going back to what pushed you to the sector initially, I think we talk about very often these conversations, people do have a personal connection, an experience that drew them to the medtech industry. And we talk about how people in the industry, I think generally do, they do care very much about the mission, but how much of that stays with you day to day? Obviously you're not thinking about it every moment, every day, but that inspiration is maybe not the best word, but that drive that you got through your friend's unfortunate accident, do you still feel an imprint of that in you today, in every day you work?
I think it's amplified now because honestly, the fire burns bright because now I feel like I'm in a position to make more of an impact to those kinds of situations, right? Back then I was a helpless bystander who didn't know how to help. But now being in this field and frankly, like being with our customers, listening to patient stories, talking to surgeons who tell us how their patients come back and feel nothing but gratitude because, you know, they could play with their child again, they could walk again, they could pick up a stick again and run. Mm-hmm. Those are the stories that are kind of my guiding light and my North Star for what I do. Every day I wake up, it's not that you think of the patient every day, but in the back of your mind, you're thinking that you have a mission and you have a privilege to be able to be in this industry and to be able to make an impact to patients' lives, right? Nothing pleases me more than a patient story.
Fantastic. So let's talk about your move into the industry. You sort of we covered your start a little bit, but you've been at DePuy, you've been at Covidien, you spent some time at Lilly in BD. Now you're at BD. What was first, and take away, what was your first big job in medtech?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I started ground up as a manufacturing operator back not very far from where I am today, Tarrytown, New York, and it was sort of a pharmaceutical company. The reason I say DePuy was my first big job was I felt like it was a proper job where I could utilize my talents, and it challenged me in a way that the other job hadn't been, right? But I'm very appreciative that I got to start ground up in that environment, because now when you put in solutions, being R&D, when you implement manufacturing solutions, you can feel some of their pain sometimes in terms of scale up and design for manufacturing and things like that. So the DePuy one was really a big one for me. I spent about, I want to say close to more than five years there in J&J, growing through the ranks of how to make biologic scaffolds work for multiple different applications. What happened at that time was, you know, DePuy Spine is basically an instrument company. They had acquired a biologic arm. It was actually a French company called Orquest, which they acquired, and they called it DePuy Spine over there and added that arm. However, you know, after doing some of that organic scaffolding work and biologic scaffolding work, unbeknownst to me, people started to notice some quality that maybe they kept saying I had to kind of bring people together and move the ball forward. That's how it was conveyed to me, because the first time they told me to be a manager, I was like, I don't know why you're asking me that. I'm perfectly happy doing what I'm doing. And they're like, oh, no, we notice how you talk in meetings, how people kind of, you know, want to do what you're saying, and you have a way around you that you're able to bring people forward together in a cohesive manner when there are disagreements. And that started my journey into like managing people. You know, to be perfectly transparent, at first, I thought it was, you know, a pain. There was a lot of like complaining, and now you had to like deal with emotions and people's feelings and things like that. But I really started to enjoy it when I started to see the impact you could make and how you could amplify your skill sets, you know, tenfold if you had other people doing something similar and understanding how, what, you know, made them tick and what did not. So that's kind of I became a manager in DePuy, or a product development manager, really managing all aspects of development and, you know, managing suppliers. And from there on, I think it was, you know, again, transparently, it was a immigration related thing where my application had got stuck for a while in the queue around, you know, the work visa. And I literally had 3 months to find a company that would move the ball forward on it, or I would have to go back home. So I started looking into, you know, the companies, and Covidien back then, which is now, you know, part of Medtronic, kind of had a role around, they were trying to create their first team member to do supplier development work to market products, develop and market products in emerging markets. So from managing about 50 people, I took an individual contributor role because I'm like, oh, I've done this for 5 years. Now I can reset. And, you know, again, ironically, a year later, I had 100 and some odd people. I think there must be something, right? People kept telling me along the way that I wasn't meant to be an individual contributor. So, but that part was really exciting. I actually got to travel to emerging countries, listen to, again, unmet needs in those areas, look into problem statements. I was in their minimally invasive surgery division. So we were really looking at optimizing our offerings that we had in the US, but figuring out how you could customize them for emerging markets. So very, very fulfilling role. Got to meet a lot of KOLs in emerging markets, Asia Pac, and, you know, do that job. A couple of years after I did that job within Covidien, they kind of said, hey, we want to open an R&D center in India. And why don't you go and live like an expat and, you know, figure out that center for us? And so that's what I did. From there on, one day I went back home to India after about 2002. So yeah, 2013, I actually went back home. I remember picking up my bags, me and my wife, you know, went back home and we're like, oh, we'll do this for a while and see where life takes us over there. Again, really fulfilling role, got to set up an entire R&D center, you know, for our business, work with the people over there. And a couple of years later, we got the news that we had been acquired. So I was actually in India when we got acquired. And my manager back then said, like, oh, I think the organization's pretty stable. Why don't you come back here and manage our minimally invasive surgery device franchise again for R&D?
That's amazing. Were you near your family in India or were they in another part of the country?
So it's like an hour and a half flight. So you can imagine they practically lived in my home for a few years because, you know, as parents, it's a rare occasion, a rare opportunity for them to connect with their children again. And we thoroughly enjoyed it too. So we loved having them. So me and my wife really enjoyed the couple of years we had there, thankful for that opportunity. And when we got acquired, I think there was a clear conversation around, you know, Medtronic always says we make Ferraris and, you know, not the other stuff. And so the division that we were responsible for was seen as the other stuff. And there was always a conversation around, hey, this doesn't belong in Medtronic's portfolio, right? So I think eventually they divested this to Cardinal Health for about $6.5 billion. At that time, you can appreciate, Tom, I had been in the industry for like 12, 13 years, grinding it out on a daily basis to launch products, right? And it takes a toll sometimes because as soon as you say you are in NPD, there is an obligation to commercialize. If you say you're in innovation, there is no obligation to commercialize. Right? Because it can turn out great, it can turn out not so great. So from there on, what happened was, you know, while this was going on, Eli Lilly approached me and said, hey, we're, you know, opening an innovation center in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I used to live in Mass because our Covidien headquarters was in Mansfield. So they said, like, hey, we're opening an innovation center. We need, you know, in Kendall Square, Cambridge. You know, this is about the next generation of technologies that 5-7 years down the line could make its way into the product field, but no obligation, right? And that's all I needed to hear, no obligation. I was like, okay, it's been 11 years of obligations. I'll try something different. And I kid you not, 1 month into my job at their VP of R&D resigned and they said, why don't you take over the R&D group over there as well? So it's like, I think people, fortunately or unfortunately, like the people management aspect has been, every time a guy try to get rid of something, it manifolds and multiplies and I get more.
If I'm the head of R&D and they're hiring you, I'm getting a box and right. Packing up things in my office.
Exactly. So actually, Lilly is headquartered in Indianapolis, and you know my role was in Kendall Square at that time. So for a couple of years, it was really good. I got to innovate a lot, you know, look at the technologies, but I also had the obligation on the device side to really commercialize their connected device platform, but also their diabetes and like the TALTS platform around rheumatoid arthritis, right? So we had to commercialize some of those products, launch connected solutions. We did that. And at that time, Eli Lilly, you know, had a great manager. He said, like, Tesh, we want you to come to Indianapolis and formally take on the role, you know, over there. There is so many people. That's when I learned how angry my wife could be when we brought up like a mid-coast move, which is like, absolutely not. I think it's a mental block in her head, but nonetheless.
I have my son, anyone listening knows my son is Indiana at school at Purdue. So it's definitely a different place.
It is a different place. And having been coastal all her life, I think she just needs to know she's coastal. It's not like we access the beach every day.
But the same way. Yeah. I don't own a boat. I don't fish, but I like to know that the ocean is less than an hour away. It just makes me feel good.
I remember even taking her on a trip to Indianapolis that Eli Lilly paid for that said, like, maybe she'll get sold when she attends. And it had the opposite effect. She's like, oh, yeah, this is Indianapolis. I'm not
there. No offense to our Indianapolis listeners. It's a lovely town. I've been there a few
it's
times.
It's a lovely town. Yeah. It takes some getting used to. It's an acquired taste.
Yeah. I suspect there are Midwesters who don't understand the coastal perspective either. So it's just a different.
And the other thing that you may or may not know is like we're from a very minority faith. We're Zoroastrian in nature. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I haven't, no.
Think of it as like before Alexander came and persecuted Greece, we were the occupants of that Persia and Iran.
Oh, okay.
And so he took us out. And so we're like ancient Zoroastrians. There's maybe less than 100,000 left in the world.
Interesting.
So when you are from that minority faith in the U.S. along the coast, we have some families at least that we can associate
sure.
with. So at that time, we had just had our son. He was born in 2016. And so we had that at the back of our mind to kind of say like, hey, we want to be in this area so we can have him grow up with some people of the same faith so he understands mm-hmm. for our tradition and culture. So that also had a bearing and probably had even a greater bearing in me taking up the role in New Jersey, because one of the only three places of worship for us in the United States is actually like 30 minutes from my house here.
Oh, interesting.
So it kind of, ended up well. But coming back to the Eli Lilly story, I told my manager I couldn't do it. He's like, oh, take a couple of years, figure it out. I'm like, no, it'd be morally wrong to string you along. I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So we told them we wouldn't be those people who would relocate and, take on, in hindsight, if you look at Eli Lilly's stock from when I left, it's like seven times, that number. So I could have retired.
Lived anywhere you wanted, yeah.
Lived anywhere I wanted now. That didn't happen. So we, at that time, my career, I've always thought about it as like, what other experiences do I need?
We'll take a quick break from our interview with Teshtar Alavia, VP of R&D for BD Interventional Surgery, to finish our conversation with Praveen Tiwari, Executive Vice President and Business Head for FPT. So you very clearly have a global presence. With that in mind, can you give us a better high-level understanding of your services?
Sure. FPT provides end-to-end service. I call it, sketch to scale. So we not only help organization in the consulting services, design thinking, creating the architecture, development of the software, deployment, optimization, management, all 9 yards. So our portfolio includes standard consulting, app dev, off-the-shelf product implementation like SAP, MS Dynamic, testing services, back office, product engineering, whether it is 2D modeling, 3D modeling, PCB design. 50% of our revenue comes from digital aid services, which includes cloud, artificial intelligence, AR, VR, mobility, other services. That's what we bring to the table.
Thank you, Praveen. That's very, very helpful. Now, could you help us understand really what differentiates you?
Let me start with a statement, small enough to care and big enough to dare. What does that mean? We are a small company, very hungry, humble, nimble, and big enough to dare because we have done very complex projects which ensures delivery certainty to our customer. Now, the biggest advantage that Vietnam brings to our customers are two things. One, geographical diversity vis-a-vis other outsourcing location. And Vietnam is not yet exploited as much as other outsourcing location. Therefore, the attrition is very, very low, which is very critical for the consistency and the support on the development side for our customers.
Well, Praveen, there are so many things that you said that I love. I mean, I want to get tattooed on my forehead. In particular, small enough to care, big enough to dare. I mean, come on. So, with my enthusiasm aside, let's talk more about how you work with medical device companies. Could you take us more specifically into how does FPT work with medical device companies?
FPT has been working with med device in various areas. Software for medical devices, for CT, MRI, X-ray, endoscopy, hematology, urine analysis. So we have built software on and off devices. We have also built digital platform for some of the big customers where they've been able to collect a lot of data, connect various devices onto the platform. We have also applied AI into diagnosis, smart diagnosis, what we call it, detecting early lung cancer on using a CT scan, detecting tumor on ultrasound. We have applied AI for orthodontists, for cephalometric analysis, applied AI for acne detection, fat detection. Recently, we have built AI tool that can help our customer reduce the product development by half and cost by 30%.
Wow. And that's a really genuine wow. Praveen, we talked about sort of where you were, where you are now. Let's look into the future. So how do you see the medical device industry changing in the future?
Absolutely. There's a lot of revolution happening in the med device. The innovation in AI, the devices are getting more and more smarter, and they are giving much more precise diagnostic, thus improving the patient outcome. Personalization is driving new development. It's actually helping device to become much more sophisticated, transmit real-time data so that, you know, a patient's personal need is achieved. The last is remote and remote monitoring and telehealth, which is becoming much more adopted and sought after. So these devices, when connected on internet, can provide a lot of data, and that can help providers to take informed decision and thus avoiding patients to come to the hospital in person and avoid personal visits. So these are the things that I see in the future in the med device and the provider space.
I couldn't agree more, Praveen. Praveen Tiwari, Executive Vice President and Business Head for FPT. Thank you so much for joining us on Device Talks Weekly.
Thank you, Gillian. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed conversation with you.
And another huge thank you to FPT for sponsoring this episode of Device Talks Weekly. And I know that you're champing at the bit to learn even more about FPT. So please take a moment to visit their website, fptsoftware.com. Once again, that's fptsoftware.com. And now back to our interview with Teshtar Lavia, VP of R&D for BD Interventional Surgery.
So talk about the portfolio at surgery. What are you building? What are you designing?
So BD surgery is, when you hear of surgery, you think of like typical instruments for surgery. You think of access. You think of visualization, perfusion. The BD surgery business is very different from that. So we have about a, you know, $1.5, $1.6 billion business in surgery. That's broadly into two different platforms. We have a platform called Advanced Repair and Reconstruction, which is all about soft tissue reinforcement. Mm-hmm. If you think about soft tissue reinforcement, it starts with the, you know, hernia. So we have a full portfolio of obviously synthetic, you know, polypropylene hernia meshes that cater to the needs of different kinds of hernia. And then in addition to that, we now have the technology around resorbable, you know, meshes. You hear the word phasics in the field. That is what is being, you know, adopted really well in the market space. And so all of those are options for our patients, you know, whether you want a resorbable mesh, you need a permanent mesh, you have, or we are working towards a full portfolio of options on the resorbable side. We call it hernia transformation. From our perspective, is like, hey, making sure the patient and the surgeon have an option should they need to choose one. Currently, the market is very limited in terms of having those options. You know, polypropylene's been the driver of hernia meshes for a while, and phasics is really changing that standard. And beyond that, you know, we are always looking at additional soft tissue applications, right? You can think of additional soft tissue applications around like abdominoplasty, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Diastasis recti. You could think of options like that. So we are now working to understand what other, if you can reinforce soft tissue in one area with this technology, you can reinforce soft tissue in whatever area is needed. So as we look into the market and look into the unmet needs, we are very focused on developing the solutions in those spaces where any kind of soft tissue reinforcement is needed. That's the advanced repair and reconstruction side. The other side, we call it surgical solutions. And that honestly is, you think of your journey from pre-op to post-op in terms of wound, you know, skin antisepsis, right? So before you enter your surgery, the brown liquid they, you know, coat you with, chloroprep, mm-hmm. you know, that's going to be the surgery. When you are in surgery, what they, you know, irrigate the wound with in order to debride the bacteria and everything. is Surgiphor, which is our product line. You obviously have the hemostats and the sealants business in our field that is used to, you know, stop, you know, adjacent stop bleeding. So that's kind of the other part of our business where we're looking at. So between those two, it's a really unique business. I want to say it's like a materials-based business, but it has some really exciting properties. We always say that we want to repair, restore, and regenerate. And I think we have some really good candidates in the repair and restore pipeline. As BD, we're looking to be adventurous around the regenerate pipeline now.
Does this take you back to where your career started?
Exactly. So yeah. Really excited. The regenerate aspect is what excites me the most. And frankly, I think having those conversations and, you know, talking about areas like skin substitutes and wound healing and, you know, nerve repair and all of those areas are exciting, you know, unmet needs. When I say exciting, they're not exciting from a patient perspective, but they're exciting from a perspective of being able to solve for something in that space, right? Because that can drastically improve a patient's experience when they unfortunately have to go through these, you know, disease states.
Well, that's the cool science fiction stuff. If you can develop tools that help things regenerate, does your team have multiple disciplines, both in traditional sort of hard materials and in chemical and soft materials? I imagine you've got a great mix of engineers.
Yeah, I want to say we have one of the best teams, you know, not just in BDX, but in the industry. I think they're so self-driven around the potential of what the future of science can be. It's a really good mix. Obviously, we had an acquisition in Tifa, you know, a few years ago, which helped us bring in the basics and the Galaflex technology. You know, we retain the scientific founder of that business, David Martin, so the chief scientific officer of that. And he's been phenomenal in terms of what other applications could come up and how they were pursuing those opportunities, you know, when they were a different company. We've started to put those in our pipeline and think about, you know, validating those with our, you know, KOLs and clinicians and our customers. So it's really an exciting time in surgery. We have a lot of, you know, growth opportunities, and we always pitch the surgery business to BD as a primary growth driver for BD. Mm-hmm.
What do you see this, and I know you're not the business leader, but in terms of technology, where do you see this headed in 5 years? Are we going to be hearing, or 10 years? In this area, what does the future look like? Are we going to be hearing about devices that really are kind of are mind-bending and just really super exciting?
I think so. You know, it may not be five because unfortunately or fortunately, some of the rigors of having these devices require them to go through a PMA, right? And we all know like clinical trials are long, time consuming, expensive. But I do see some mind-bending devices, whether it's from BD or outside of BD, coming to the field and helping restore, you know, the quality of life for soft tissue reinforcement.
Excellent. And just final question, just looking back at your career, I mean, you've had, it's an interesting path, and it seems like you've had opportunities presented to you that opened up doors. Do you have any sort of, what advice do you give to a young person entering the industry to sort of be open to new opportunities, be open to things that are made available to you? How do you advise them in building a career that for them?
I think people coming into the industry nowadays are much more knowledgeable about what they're getting into than maybe when I did, right? I frankly did not have any idea of what I was getting into and kind of learned, you know, to you know, fly the plane while I was building it. But the one thing I have found that worked for me was not to shy away from problems. Like if you gravitate towards problems and you try to solve them, I think you get noticed no matter what you're doing, right? What happens is people sometimes think that this is a chaos, I don't want to inherit it, or this is a problem. I do the opposite. You show me a bad situation and I'll say what's worse.
Yep.
I want to solve it. And if you have that mentality of, otherwise, why are you working, right? Like you're working to solve a problem. If there is no problem and you want to enter a cushy situation, I would challenge the intellectual stimulation there, right? And for me, nothing is worse than not having an intellectually stimulating day at work. So I think that don't shy away from problems. Be the one to volunteer to solve problems when you're young in your career. And, you know, work hard. I think there is no shortcut to success. If you do what you're supposed to do on a daily basis, and not expect anything for it, you will actually find that you are exponentially getting rewarded for it, because your mind is not consumed by whether you deserve something, whether you are entitled for something. Your 100% or 110% is just focused on solving a problem. And that, when you solve a problem for a business, for a person, for a function, for an organization, for a patient, nothing gets recognized more than that in an industry. And you just navigate through that. And the other thing I think is, you know, as you, depending on what your aspirations are, I feel like always respect people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, give them the courtesy of, like, nobody comes to work thinking I'm going to do a bad job. They may not agree with you. Communicate, collaborate, persevere, be resilient, right? Those are the key ingredients for success.
Excellent advice. All right. Well, this has been a very enjoyable conversation, Tesh. Thanks for sharing your story.
Absolutely, Tom. Glad to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks weekly podcast. Thanks to FPT for sponsoring this entire episode. Make sure you check out their website at fptsoftware.com. Make sure you also go to devicetalks.com to find all of our other podcasts there. You can also subscribe, of course, to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss a future episode. But while you're at devicetalks.com, register for our upcoming Device Talks Tuesdays, brought to you by the QT Group. And of course, register for Device Talks Boston and Device Talks Minnesota, which are happening next year. You can go to devicetalks.com, find websites to all of those. We would love to see you on the webinar, and we'd love to, of course, see you in person. Well, that again is a wrap. We have, as I mentioned earlier on, just a couple more episodes of Device Talks Weekly for 2024. So we will be back next week. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Device Talks Weekly Podcast.